Well, good morning. Welcome. And I don't know if you can see there very well, but the second person down there is Sangha from India. So I'm teaching internationally this morning. I'm going to put that on my resume, international teacher. But we're going to continue our class on compassion. But before we begin, let's have a word of prayer, please. Father, the Father of compassion, Father of love, we come to you this morning and we ask your blessing on our time together. Bless us to understand how you want us to react in difficult times. We ask, Father, that you teach us your compassion and the compassion that Jesus showed. In Jesus' name, amen. So just a quick reminder, we are talking about this idea of being called to compassion. The concept, of course, is that in today's world, we've often, maybe we leave compassion behind sometimes because we're so set on making our points or having our perspective prevail. A lot of times we don't think about compassion, and we become a pretty self-centered people in general, I think. We probably always have been as humans, but something to consider. And so we've been talking about this, how Jesus and God have actually called us to compassion. Excuse me. In Zechariah, it talks about justice and showing mercy and compassion to one another. And in Colossians, it talks about being clothed with compassion. And so what we are about is trying to learn how to do that and what that means. Here we go. Here we are. Right? And the way that our program is kind of going, we have spent some time talking about the nature of God and a little bit about the nature of men, particularly around this concept of how easy it is for us to judge other people. And last week we talked about our neighbor and having compassion for our neighbor and who our neighbor was, and we used the Good Samaritan as our example of what that the story that Jesus told about who actually was the neighbor. This morning we're going to look at something a little bit different because the rest of our time together, I almost said 3 or 4 weeks, but we just finished the end of first week last week, so we're already 3 weeks behind. But the idea is to spend some time talking about those people we should have compassion for. And again, we remind you just very quickly that compassion is about getting involved, and it is part of who God is, and He has called us to be salt and light, and I believe that that salt and light has a lot to do with how we are to be showing compassion for other folks. We looked at the Good Samaritan last time. But today we're going to talk about a topic that most folks don't like to talk a lot about, and that is death. We're going to talk about what happens, not when we die, but what happens to everyone else when we die. And we're going to talk a little bit about being called to compassion for those who mourn. And I've chosen a couple stories to read to us as we kind of begin. So I'm going to ask you to be thinking this morning about the concept of mourning and what we learn from these stories about Jesus' response to those who have lost someone. Okay? So we'll start with the widow's son. It says, this is taken from Luke 7. It says, soon afterwards, Jesus went into a town called Nain, and his disciples and a large crowd went along with him. As he approached the town's edge, a dead person was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. And a large crowd from the town was with her. When the Lord saw her, his heart went out to her. Compassion. That's the word for compassion. And he said, don't cry. Then he went up and touched the bier where they carried him on. And the bearers stood still. He said, young man, I say to you, get up. The dead man sat up and began to walk. And Jesus gave him back to his mother. And they were filled with awe and praised God. A great prophet has appeared among us. They said, God has come to help his people. The news about Jesus spread throughout Judea and the surrounding country. So let's start there for a moment. Why do you think the news spread throughout the surrounding company about a country about Jesus? Sharon, what do you think?
Not many people are able to bring someone back to the dead.
Not many, huh?
Yes.
Sharon said, not many people are able to bring someone back from the dead. We might even take that a little further and say, yeah, no one is that. And so that's quite an amazing thing, right? But that's not the focus of the topic this morning, that Jesus can raise the dead. You're going to see that again in the next story as well. And that's important to us as Christians to understand that Jesus can raise the dead because, well, frankly, we put a lot of faith in that because we expect him to raise the dead again. In the end. But what else do you notice about Jesus and about this situation and this story and his compassion as demonstrated in this story? Come on, guys, make me look bad in front of Sangha.
This wasn't a person who was nobility. This wasn't a person who had great wealth and standing in the community. And Jesus went to somebody who had no hope in their life. Well, because she was a widow. And he went to the poorest of the poor and the ones without hope. And now the story is spreading. We have hope. We have, because of this man's heart, he's coming to us. He's not going to the rich and
yes.
He's coming to us.
Excellent point. Excellent point. And what Jim said for those that are online was that, you know, one of the things about this story that's so special is that this individual, this widow, wasn't special. Other than, unfortunately, she had lost her son, and it sounded like she was a widow, so she'd already lost her husband. And so Jesus gives hope to someone here that had no hope. Another reason probably why his reputation started to spread across the time. What else do you notice? Thank you, Jim. What else do you notice? Yeah?
I noticed the phrase, like he says, don't cry. And a lot of times we might say that to like kids or something where like we just want the crying to stop. It gets annoying or, something like that. But he doesn't want the crying to stop so much as the suffering to stop.
Great point. One of the wise among us said that sometimes when children are crying and we say stop crying, we're really wanting them to just be quiet. But what Jesus was actually expressing here was a desire to relieve her suffering. You know, this was something that was very deep. But tell me, why do we suffer when somebody dies? Sounds like an obvious question, but let's talk about it for a second. Sharon? Yes.
So he was probably the one who helped her with, and probably had a job or whatever. So she was really going to be destitute afterwards.
Yep, yep. So Sharon again reminds us that as the only son of a widow, she probably was losing her financial income, her resources, not just her son, but also, you know, how was she going to survive? So that's a very, you know, important point. And frankly, sometimes when we lose someone, those kind of issues do come up for folks, right? You know, it's terrible to go to a funeral and someone says, yeah, he had no insurance, there's nothing for the family, it's a very difficult situation. And in this case, that was hers. Good point. Other thoughts? Why we get so anxious about dying? I mean, do you think this really bothered Jesus that this guy died? I mean, you know, this is the one who was before time and will be after time, sees all of eternity. Do you think he was really kind of like bothered that this guy has died? Jim?
I'm sure he wasn't happy about it, but the verse says when he saw her. It wasn't a response to, you know, it doesn't say, and when he saw him lying dead there, he felt bad that the guy died. He sees, This young man isn't suffering. He's gone off. He's looking at the suffering and has the compassion for the suffering.
Ah, yeah. So Jim points out that this passage actually, Jesus' reaction isn't to the dead. Jesus' reaction is to those who have lost, those who are alive. And that's whom he had compassion on. I mean, we don't know, but the reason that he raised this person back to life from this passage, we don't know if it was for his benefit, but it surely sounds like it was for the mother's benefit, doesn't it? Like there was something about this that was touching Jesus. And again, that term where it says, when the Lord saw her, his heart went out to her. That's the word that we've been talking about. Remember I said that I think it was 6 out of the 8 times that this word is used in Greek. It's used to describe Jesus and his response to compassion. This is one of those times. So you see, remember, compassion is that idea of being not empathy, feeling sorry for someone, but having a kind of gut reaction to it. And here it's interpreted as his heart went out to her. Interesting. So what else do you see? Anything else here about this story, Mick?
Well, one of the things I think that may have moved him a little bit was when he saw that mother bereft of her son, I have to wonder if he didn't see his own mother who would be bereft of her son, and he was moved in that way also.
Yeah, so Mickey makes the point that recognizing this mother-son relationship, maybe he's even forecasting and recognizing the pain the pain that he will bring to his own mother at his death, which was very clear from Scripture and spoken like a Catholic, I just had to say. Michael.
Kind of makes me, going off of that, it makes me realize, what it meant for when Jesus told, I think it was James, said, John, at the cross, said, this is your mother,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Take care of her. I mean, the significance of that for me, going off of that context, is a lot more impactful because he's saying, I'm not going to be there for her anymore.
Yeah.
I need you to help her, which is because in this case, he's like, he raises the son, so giving that stability in her life a little bit more. But
yes. Yeah.
He needed somebody else to help his own mother.
Great point. Yeah, great point. I mean, Michael reminds us that even on the cross, Jesus said to John, here's your mother. Not just a concern for himself, which we see several times on the cross, Jesus kind of brushes away, but he does have concern for what she's going to go through. You get a feel that Jesus kind of understands this concept a bit. It's easy, frankly, for us to kind of slough through it and say, well, yeah, but Jesus sees eternity, so he understands that death is just a transition. I love that example that Mike used in one of his sermons once where it's like, death is just our valet, where it's just when we change our clothes. That's really what death is. And Jesus understands that, but here he really reacts. Let's look at another example. Similar example, by the way, if you start at Genesis and work your way all the way to Revelation, there is almost no book that doesn't have a death in it. I mean, even Psalms talks about, death in Proverbs. The point here is this is something that started with Abel and, has continued to this day. This is something. Again, one of those kind of clues and interesting points about the Bible is that it doesn't slough over the tough stuff. And in the Bible, you see death of parents, you see death of spouses, you see death of children, you see people in mourning all the time. This is an important concept, I think, for us to recognize how compassion connects with this. Jim, you had a comment? Okay. And then the other story, which As soon as I've read the first one, you probably went to this one immediately, which is Lazarus. So let's look at this story. And this story is taken from Luke 7. On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus was already had been in the tomb for 4 days. So again, what happened before this was he got a message that his friend Lazarus was dying. He came and finds that he's been in the tomb already for 4 days. Now, Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to him, but Mary stayed at home. "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you've been here, my brother would not have died, but I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." And Martha answered, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she replied. "I believe you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who has come into the world." After she said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. "The teacher is here," she said, "and is asking for you." When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at a place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house, comforting her, noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." Then Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping. He felt deeply moved in spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, could not he, who opened the eyes of the blind, had kept this man from dying? Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of the dead man, "by this time there's a bad odor, for he's been dead for 4 days." Then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you, if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" So they took a stone away, and when Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I know that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they might believe that you sent me." When he said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out. His hands and feet were wrapped in strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go." So what do you see about compassion in this story? Our word is used twice in this story, where it talks about Jesus' reaction. First of all, let's admit, is this an amazing thing? It's the bomb. It's the bomb, right? And the people, what's surprising to me, do you see how the people have a consistent message? Right? I mean, the consistent message of the people is, if he'd got here earlier, he could have done something. And so Jesus at the end says, "I'm doing this so that they understand something." And what do you think they now understand? Jesus is Lord of both the living and the dead. I mean, that is a significant teaching in this context, and something that changed the life of Lazarus, but I have a feeling changed the life of Mary, Martha, and many other people who witnessed this, trying to understand what just happened. But what else do you notice about Jesus' response during this difficult situation where one of his close friends dies, the brother of close friends as well, die? Lionel? He was moved.
He felt that. I was not to say that he hasn't in any other situation, but specifically here, this is his problem.
Yeah, and right. What Lionel said was he was moved. And it's clear from the way that Luke captured this that there was something emotional going on here. I mean, in fact, the most famous scripture, one of the most famous scriptures, at least the shortest scripture, Jesus wept. Now, do you think he was weeping because Lazarus was dead?
I think he was weeping because he saw the people around him were hurting.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, was he... he knew he could raise him from the dead. In fact, he even explains that he came late so that he could raise him from the dead. That wasn't the issue, I don't believe. But he did see Mary, he saw Martha, he saw other mourners around, torn up, and he wept. I actually never really noticed this, but you know, after that it says Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. So there wasn't just one incident, there was multiple ones, you know, as he interacted and saw the people, then when he got to the tomb and saw the people, he was emotional about that. Jim?
I'm not sure how to put it into words, but when you look at the whole context of this, they're not sitting around in the kitchen having this discussion, and he says, where did you lay him? And they said, well, we put him in this tomb over the hill, and they discovered. They're wanting to connect. There is this, come see him. Come see where we put him. Mm. And there's this larger context of this community suffering. Let's go out to the grave. Let's go take a look.
Yeah, so Jim shared that in the story, what we see is a community suffering, and they come together and they take action. It's not just, you know, as he said, sitting around the table talking about this, they're moving from place to place. When one got up, remember they said she got up, they thought they were going to she was going to the grave, everybody went with her. Now I recognize that this is very strong in Jewish tradition in terms of the role of death and how you manage death and things like that. Okay, that's really, really important. Ruth? Yeah.
You know, this is what I want. This is
great. Yeah. Yeah, it's a great point. She mentioned that part of what may have moved Jesus this way was seeing how the community loved Lazarus and interacted with him, was mourning him. Michael.
I'm not like too like extremely knowledgeable about this, but I don't want to make the argument that he was actually, I think in the moment, yes, I think he was probably sad to just see his own friend dead. And here's why. Because I think when we as Christians, we go to a funeral for someone that we know, and we have a knowledge that they are fine. They're just like, their soul has gone on, and they're, you know, they're living in eternal happiness, and we know that we're going to see them one day. But I think that in the moment, I think there's something really deep within us that says this is something that we need to be very, very sad about. Because I think no matter the context, I went to viewings for family members, and you go into the other room and you know, you see someone that you don't know, and you see that they're dead as well. And it's, you know, it's a sad thing to see, but I think it doesn't really compare to when you see your own, like someone that you know, someone that you love, you just see them there.
Yeah.
I think that's attack.
Yeah, so it's a great point, Michael. I mean, and I wasn't trying to suggest, and I think you're right to kind of point this point out. I wasn't trying to suggest that he wasn't feeling loss of not having Lazarus. And Michael makes a very good point that that is part of who we are. When we have relationship with someone and we've lost that relationship, there's a mourning, there's a suffering, there's a pain about that. Michael also made the point, though, that as Christians, we go to someone where we have relationship, we see that they are past, right? And we know where they are. So even in the joy of that, we recognize there's still sorrow in that. And I think part of that, Michael also made the point that, you know, if you're at a funeral home, there is someone that you love one place and then someone else somewhere else, right? It's a different feeling between the two because one of them you had a relationship, one of them you may not have had a relationship. Doesn't mean we couldn't feel sorry for everyone in both rooms. That's not the point. But there is a point about this relationship connection, right? Interestingly enough, when you think about that, though, what you really sorrow about in that relationship is about its impact on us and on other people, right? Really fascinating. Thank you, Michael. Jim.
You know, this entire conversation for the past 5 minutes, it really points out the how it all does fit with what you started off with, the verses that mourn with those that mourn. This is a call as compassion to be a community, to expand that relationship and understand that we are tied. You have a loss, but as friends and neighbors of Mary and Martha, we mourn with them. We mourn with you. Mm. And that's part of the compassion is, I have a loss, I feel that suffering. Yeah, that's correct. When you have a loss, I should feel that.
Yeah, Jim reminds us, and we'll talk more about this actually through the rest of our class, that mourning with those who mourn is what we are called to do. Because those who have lost someone, all right, yeah, they have a pain. But those of us that have connection and relationship with those who have lost someone could have a pain too, should have a pain because of that. Ruth, you have that at hand? It's a great point, really good point. Ruth makes the point that in order for Jesus to be able to relate to the pain of those who of us who have suffered that kind of loss, it makes a lot of sense that he felt pain that Lazarus was gone as well. Thank you for that. That's really, really important. So we see in these two stories that Jesus, these are two stories where it moved Jesus. Now with the widow's son, I don't know if he even knew that individual. It sounds like he was kind of saw a burial party kind of walking down the road kind of thing and took advantage of that situation, you know, to teach a lesson and to relieve pain. This case, he did know the individual and the individuals involved, right? So the sisters as well, and took action. And in both cases, we find our kind of root words here in terms of he had compassion. So if we're trying to figure out how to clothe ourselves with compassion, there may be a clue here about one way to do that. Sharon, is that a...
Well, I'm going on with all of this. This just starts through thinking about things. And, you know, it says Jesus waited to come. But in his waiting, he also knew that because he waited, Lazarus was gone. And, yes, he knew he was going to do this. But nevertheless, he had those days to miss him. And I think they're right, but you know, he had the good feeling a lot.
Absolutely, yeah.
No, just like they said, if he had been there, Lazarus would have died. But he allowed it to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing that for me, and Sharon was talking about the delay that he took before he came. And, you know, and the point being, if he had been there, everyone said he hadn't died. And, you know, that love for Lazarus may have been so great that if he had been there, Lazarus wouldn't have died. But then these messages wouldn't have been taught. You know, so that's a really interesting point that maybe one of the reasons, frankly, he waited 4 days was so that Lazarus would die, which sounds a little crazy to say, but he had a relationship with this family. He loved this family. He didn't want it to do that. This way, that delay, you notice it's 2 miles, by the way, you know, from Jerusalem to where they were. Interesting points. Really, really good. Thank you for that. Let's talk for a moment, though, about, so, okay, I think we can say, part of a compassionate response would be to mourn with those who mourn. But what gets in the way of that? When I first wrote this, I started to say, what are the excuses we use for not showing compassion? Let's talk about obstacles. And some of them may be played out as excuses, but what are some of the things you think about? Yeah, Anna?
I kind of like what you were talking about before, when we don't know someone personally and have like a direct loving relationship, we like have trouble like putting ourselves into the relationship and mourning that person because we don't know them. But I think from the examples we saw, Jesus can see people, well, like he knows all of our hearts, and he, you know, knows all of us, but people he doesn't know and sees them as if they were his own mother.
Sure. Yeah. 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 Very good. I mean, your very first statement was, "Well, we didn't know them, or we don't know the people around them." I mean, frankly, I've used that excuse. Have you used that excuse? Well, I didn't know them that well. It's an interesting concept, right? I mean, she went on to say that, well, that's not really how Jesus did that, right? Jesus didn't know the widow, but still recognized the suffering that someone was under. You know, I was thinking just about, you go to any group, just about any group you could be in front of this size, you say, have you lost someone? Almost everybody's going to say yes, right? I mean, a parent or some have lost spouses, some have lost children. In this body, we can just go around the room, you know, actually, and talk about people like that. But if you ask the question, how many of you have been to funerals? It's a very different response, actually. Huh, interesting. Jim, you had a point?
I'm not sure what the analogous thing is for us today, but rules and regulations. In both these cases, I mean, take the case of the widow's son. Jesus was not supposed to touch the funeral pyre. I mean, he would have been unclean. He could have said, well, I would like to get involved, but religious restrictions keep me from, you know, it does kind of go back to the Good Samaritan. But
yeah.
There, the only thing that I can immediately think of there is in Massachusetts, you're not allowed to stop for anybody who needs help outside the road. You can't take pity on a hitchhiker or something like that. For your safety, I'm not sure what we have in our in the Pittsburgh area that say, oh, I would like to do that.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, Jim was talking about the different kinds of, you know, kind of excuses, and sometimes there may be people that would bring a religious element or come, you know, and he made the point that even Jesus shouldn't have touched the grave because he was therefore unclean ceremoniously. And would have had to go through a cleansing process and, you know, things like that. Sangha, our friend in India, is here. And one of the first times I was with him, we were driving down the road on the way to the Angels place. And there are crematoriums on the side of the road. You know, so it's a very different culture. They don't necessarily have a funeral home where everybody goes and stands around and drinks coffee and has cookies. It's a different culture, but that culture and that approach, burn the body, doesn't change the pain that some people are going through, you know, with that loss and that idea. Yeah. Final?
Is there maybe sometimes certain cultural influences on displaying emotion? You know,
sure.
Sometimes, you know, some people may, you know, have a certain kind of background or upbringing where maybe by not displaying certain kinds of emotion, that somehow that's supposed to mean that that's strength somehow.
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, it's a good point. Some of us may avoid another obstacle or excuse might be, you know, that's an emotional situation and I can't put myself in those. I'll tell you that at my mother's funeral, the one person I thought would not be emotional was the most emotional. And so someone that finds themselves in those situations may choose not to be in those situations, right? Yeah. Other thoughts about, yeah, Mike?
Well, not having the words to say. You know, when it comes to somebody with a loss, you know, you always feel like you need to say something, you need to bring comforting words, and sometimes you're at a loss, and so you hold back because, well, what would I say?
Right. So Mike said that, you know, another obstacle or things is, what would we say? You know, and it is a difficult thing, particularly after 14 people have just said the exact same thing. You know, what do I say? How do I really bring comfort? What do I do? Michael?
I like the word obstacles because I think that even obstacles. Just in like how our mindsets are formed, like I think that like different, like you're saying, like different upbringings can change the way that you look at relationships themselves.
Sure.
Like, we're talking about how the impact of someone dying really comes from making some kind of connection. Whether it's I'm connected to you, so I want to be able to feel everything you're feeling, I want to be involved in that. But some people, just because of like whether they've had like, certain things happen in their lives or that, like where they were, where they grew up, it's like harder for them to start those relationships.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, Michael makes a point similar to Lionel's that, you know, not just showing emotions, but it may be having relations. There are other things that are so ingrained in who we are that might make it tough. Frankly, for some of us, what makes it tough is that we lost someone. And, you know, funerals and situations like that remind us of those things. And a lot of times we don't like to be reminded of those things, right? Here's a few things that I thought about and some quick responses that I thought I might just share with you as we were talking about this. I think it's common for people to say, but I'm just uncomfortable with death. Well, you know, ironically, it's one of the few things we all have in common. You know, and it is empathy in action, and it is a reality of situations. It doesn't make it easy. I'm not saying it's easy. And I'm not saying, well, I just don't like it, right? But I mean, you hear all the stories about, I don't want to be around the body, I don't want, you know, all of those things, okay. But again, maybe we're focused on the wrong piece of this in terms of what the goal is. Here's another idea. You know, the other thing that occurred to me here is, you know, I'm uncomfortable about death, but it's really not about you, is it? And that's the really hard thing, I think, in these situations to get through. If we have an obstacle in our lives, whatever it is, you know, our willingness or unwillingness to show emotion or whatever those pieces are, this is a unique situation. Well, actually, you're going to see all of the compassion situations are this way, which is, it's not about what you feel or do. It's about what you can do to help someone else in that situation. Here's another excuse you hear a lot. I don't know what to say. Mike just mentioned that. Here's a couple thoughts. Don't say anything. Just be there. You know, share your experiences. You know, share the experience, but I put in here, but not your loss. And I'm just going to be very honest. You know, my father died, you know, that's been almost 2 years. And when that happened, everybody tells me the story of their father dying. Now, I get that from the perspective of trying to share and show empathy and things like that, but you see what happens when you do that? Who's the focus on? It's back on me, right? I do it too, but that's why I put it here. It's like, you know, you don't have to actually say anything. You just have to be there, share their experience, help them through that, but you don't have to bring the focus back to your loss, your issue, your concern. Now, I know sometimes we do that with good intent, so please don't misunderstand, but it's just something to consider. And I'm going to suggest you just let God speak. Send a condolence card. It's really hard to say, what do I say on this? So I found two or three scriptures. I just referenced the scriptures, signed my name, pass it on. I don't need to say something with great wisdom, and, you know, I let God speak in that context. Here's another one. Well, I didn't know them that well, you know, the deceased. And again, we suggest here that it's not about the dead, it's about the living. Now, again, I appreciate how we do show honor, you know, for those who have passed. And, you know, again, using my father as the example, because he passed at the beginning of COVID, we have yet to have a service. We have not been allowed for the first year and a half. And so it's, you know, and the reason we're having the service is partly because we want to honor him, but partly to get that support. And I got to tell you, guys, if you've had the opportunity, and I know several have in this congregation, to go through a passing of somebody during COVID when you couldn't support and be with the normal kind of stuff, it is really tough. It is really, really tough. But it's not about the dead. And frankly, the best way to build a relationship is just to be there when somebody has a need. You know, I don't know Lionel that well. He just, you know, lost a friend or whatever. But we could be there, you know. You know, when we heard just recently about Mark Davis's niece, I believe, right, that passed, you know, everybody's heart sunk. I never met the woman. But our heart sunk because we knew how much she and Mark had, right? That was the relationship. I didn't know them well. Don't know what to do. Well, here's a couple thoughts. Pray about that. We'll show you. Be open to participate. You know, and there's a great old story that's been told probably as long as I've been around, and I don't even know if it's true, but about the guy who just showed up at somebody's house, you know, a loved one had died, showed up at the house, just went into the other room and shined everybody's shoes. You know, I don't know if that's a true story. It's a kind of a cool story, right, of somebody who just selflessly went and said, here's something that they won't have time to do, so I'm just going to take care of that for them. This is a congregation of great love and concern for people who have lost loved ones. So, you know, I appreciate that. And maybe those simple acts of service are what we really need to kind of think about. I just wanted to, in conclusion here, talk very briefly about, again, just reminding you of these two scriptures. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. You know, and I read this and I thought, what this is saying is God is going to comfort me when I mourn. And I think that's true. But if we're the salt that Jesus talks about chapters later, and if, no, it's actually in 5, I think. It is in 5. Yeah. If we're the salt and we're the light, maybe we're the comforter. You know? I mean, too many times we wait for God to do something and we say, why doesn't God send somebody to fix this? I think his answer a lot of time is, I did. And there you are. What are you doing? Rejoice with those who rejoice and mourn with those who mourn. And Jim referenced this earlier in terms of just being able and open to the feeling of support and the dedication to support yourself, you know, to someone else. I don't know, and this is an honest statement, I do not know how people that do not have a Christian family survive. I could not do without the support of the people that I know I can count on for anything. I don't know how people live a life that don't have that in it. And there are a lot of people, most don't have that. Maybe they have family and elements like that, but they may not have the kind of devotion that we have the opportunity to see and the opportunity to give. So as we think about compassion, and it's an odd place to start with death, but it did occur to me that we have people in this congregation that have lost parents, spouses, even children, friends, family members. This is something we all have in common, and it is an amazing opportunity, frankly. It's weird to say that, but an amazing opportunity to demonstrate and show compassion in a way that will never be forgotten. Ever be forgotten. We got a minute left. Any other comments, concerns, or emotional outbursts? Yeah, Mike?
All these scriptures pointed to the fact that we are not, at least in this way, this is where Christians and Stoics part ways, right? We are not called to be Stoic. We're not called to be people without emotion, not letting anything affect us, not letting anything get into our hearts. That was a popular philosophy even in Paul's time, Jesus' time. But that's not us, because we're supposed to let our hearts, you know, have things affect us. That's what Jesus did. And that's what Paul is calling us to in Romans 12. Let it hit you. Let him get next to somebody and weep with them when they're in pain.
Mike reminds us that the Stoics, which was kind of a philosophy during Jesus' time, was really about the concept of no emotion. You know, we're supposed to eliminate this. And Mike suggests that Jesus suggests, bigger authority I appeal to there, Mike, that's not what we're called to be. We're not called to be Stoics. We are called to rejoice. We are called to mourn. Let's have a quick word of prayer, and then we'll close class this morning, and worship will follow. Father, thank you for teaching us, even in loss, how we can demonstrate your love. In Jesus' name, amen.